Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Not a recession, wasn't a raid, and there's no inflation. You got it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. The news we discussed yesterday, in particular with Steve Moore, that inflation year over year had dropped slightly from 9.1% in June to 8.5% in July, occasioned this response from the big guy.
I want to say a word about the news that came out today relative to the economy. Actually, I just want to say a number. Zero. Today, we received news that our economy had 0% inflation in the month of July.
Boy, zero inflation, not quite, responds the Wall Street Journal editorial page, editorial board. It's a sign of how far and fast inflation has risen this year that an increase in prices of 8.5% in July on an annualized basis triggered a market rally. Prices continue to rise across the rest of the economy. Food prices rose 1.1% in July, are up 10.9% year over year. Groceries that families take home rose even faster at 1.3% for this month, 13.1% over there. Year over year. And, oh, by the way, the net of all this is over the last year, the big guy has imposed a 3.6% pay cut on your home. I mean, on your household income, I should say. Drop in real weekly pay for the average American is down 3.6% year over year. But zero inflation is how we're supposed to understand this. More details. Breakfast cereal prices up 1.9% from June, 16.4% year over year. Bread up 2.8% from July, 13.7% year over year. Ground beef, 9.7% year over year. Bacon, 9.2%. Breakfast sausages, 15.7%. Chicken, 17.6%. Milk, 15.6%. Zero inflation. I could go on and on and on. But you know what? Let me cede my time to former Clinton Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, who had this to say to Alan Greenspan's old lady yesterday after the number was released.
I think it would be a mistake for anyone to radically revise their view of the situation based on these numbers. This report's a lot like the report in March, which was followed by very discouraging reports afterwards, making the optimists from March look wrong several months later. So I'm not saying that that's going to happen again, but I think we just need to maintain a sense of uncertainty and wait for the data as it comes. I still think we have a very serious inflation problem in this country. I don't think that inflation problem is going to go away of its own volition. And so I think we're likely to have some quite turbulent times ahead.
That doesn't exactly sound like zero inflation to me from Larry Summers.
It's just a lie. Anybody who goes grocery shopping, all the moms know that's a bunch of bull jive.
Core CPI, excluding food and energy, rose 0.3 of a point in the month, 5.9% for the past 12. That's about three times the Fed Reserve's, the Fed Board's inflation target. So, I mean, just across the board, I'm all for inflation declining because it's a wealth killer. And the 3.6% drop in real weekly pay for the average American year over year speaks to that. But let's understand why it's slightly declined. And as Larry Summers, I think, correctly said, how precarious the environment remains. The reason for the decline, as we talked about again with Steve Moore yesterday, is largely due to energy prices, which is largely due to killing demand for gas, which doesn't necessarily mean that life is being improved. It means people are making the sacrifice to not drive their car as much, not travel as much because they can't afford it. That's not exactly news to be hailed, and it's certainly not indicative of a zero inflationary environment, as that Dumkoff in the White House suggested.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also reach us at 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Nick, Northwest Side.
Yeah, I was saying that, by the way, you guys always have a great show. I've been listening to you regularly, just sometimes I don't call.
Thank you.
Because it's so early. But anyhow, the only thing that's missing from that raid is for Trump and Melania to have been home, to be forced out in their underwear, to be standing out there for maybe half an hour or an hour until, you know, they get some clothing out for them. That's going to be so ridiculous with these Democrats with their left wing controlling everything. That's what I want to see.
Okay? Thanks for the call, Nick.
I mean, speaking of Melania, they did raid her closet, by the way. They were there for 12 hours. They took things, according to Fox News, they took stuff off the shelf and flip things over. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Craig Monk Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy, and thank you for taking my call. All of the lying and deception that we get from these politicians and from the president, from their experts, so-called, with cult, you name it, whatever it is, but none of it would be possible without this rotten, corrupt leftist media. This media is the most destructive thing to our country that ever, I mean, there's so much stuff that could be you know, it's handled properly if the media did what they're supposed to do, but they do exact opposite. They do more damage to us. We got to try to put this media out of business.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
Thanks, Craig. Appreciate it. Joe Hoffman Estates.
Good morning. Just wondering if the American people are starting to become more socialist because the polls seem to be tightening for the races, Senate and Congress. And you have to wonder if. People do want socialism at this point. It's starting to seem that way.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Joe.
Yeah, are those lies or is that true? I don't know what to believe.
You know, there's some ebb and flow to this. You know, people want to be hopeful. And so you take the rays of sunshine you can identify. You want to feel like things can improve and will improve in the short term. You know, from what I've seen, it's really not outside the margin of error. But just one thing, you know, pulling back a little bit, because I don't want to be presumptuous or encourage presumptuousness. Yeah, there's, you know, the quality of the campaigns matter. The quality of the fight that the candidates and the party puts in matters. And so, you know, perhaps it'll be uneven. Perhaps I'm sure there will be missed opportunities. I don't know that anything has changed in terms of the likely outcome. You know, the margin of House Republican majority in November right now, you know, it's within a range. And the individual races matter. They're local races, particularly for the House. And the statewide races, there's going to be an ebb and flow to those as well, depending on the good news, bad news. I mean, the flip side is to say, okay, that was the message that the D.C. press corps is putting out because they're trying to encourage people to come out. Don't be fatalistic that it's going to be a Republican takeover of Congress. We're closing. Things are getting better. Well, of course they're going to try to sell that. They need to sell that because they have to motivate their base out. And then Monday night happens. And now right. The survey research on that suggests, boy, now you've got a really motivated Republican base vote, much more motivated than previously. And that was pretty motivated given the sort of turnout we've been seeing during the primary season.
Have you been driving around? Even the suburbs, people have their American flags back out on their trucks and Trump flags out.
Well, and
it was
this
crazy yesterday. I loved it.
And that FBI raid and the silence that has resulted since the raid. That is being properly seen, sans any evidence to the contrary, as completely political, as the federal government, this White House and Justice Department, using their power to try to punish a political enemy. And most Americans don't like that still, thankfully. And so you see that not just among Republican, self-identified Republican voters, but also among independents, a majority view that as well. So, you know, there's going to be things you can't predict, like who would have predicted what happened this week, other than those in the know, that will impact what happens between now and November 8th. So I wouldn't live and die by the polling on a daily basis. Steve and Huntley, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Great show. You know, I always try and think of the important things in life. So, Amy, you mentioned the guys were there for 12 hours at Mar-a-Lago. I'm wondering, did they get a lunch and a dinner break? Did they box in? Did they just help their stuff at the kitchen? Wow, that was I'd like to know how they handled that part.
Yeah, they're gonna need to unionize to get those 15-minute breaks. Thanks for the call, Steve. Peter and Joliet.
Yes, good morning. I'm wondering, on the zero inflation, if anybody's factored in the $1 million, I mean, the million barrels of fuel that we're dumping onto the market. Are we paying for that, or is that just a slush fund?
We're selling it, right? We're exporting it. We're selling it, but yeah.
But is the money going to the government or to somebody who's just...
Yeah.
It's a good question.
It's going to the seller, which would be the federal government. That's right, Peter. Thanks for the call.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The Mole at Mar-a-Lago. It sounds like a children's book Melania might write.
Doesn't it? An FBI mole inside Mar-a-Lago.
A Newsweek reporting the raid. Are we allowed to call it that? The raid on Mar-a-Lago is based largely on information from an FBI confidential human source who was able to identify what classified documents former President Trump was still hiding, and even the location of those documents. Two senior government officials told Newsweek. Who do you think the mole might have been? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
All right, so I was at Mar-a-Lago about a month ago. I'm going to have to go with a valet director. I think he was a little shady. Or maybe it was the maid. Or maybe it was Colonel Mustard in the living room with the wrench.
Yes, probably.
I mean, but he's had a mole. He's had somebody spying on him during his campaign, an FBI mole spying on him when he was president, and now an FBI mole spying on him at Mar-a-Lago. It's like a bad Hollywood script.
Somebody check to see if Michael Avenatti's on work release.
Maybe they're
running him.
But what about Anthony
time served.
Scaramucci?
Yeah, where's the mooch?
The mooch.
This This is interesting, too. I mean, this, again, is these two unnamed senior government officials that Newsweek is relying on for this reporting. We've seen how this plays out sometimes. But for the sake of conversation, let's suggest that the reporting is accurate. Not just the news of the mole that could identify the documents in question and where they were. Okay. But also this. FBI decision makers in D.C. and Miami thought that denying the former president a photo op or a platform from which to grandstand would lower the profile of the event, meaning the raid, according to a senior justice official who's a third-year veteran of the FBI. The thinking on this is fascinating, if this is true. The effort to keep the raid low-key failed. Oh, did it?
I'm sorry.
What a spectacular backfire, says this unnamed justice official. I know there is much speculation out there that this is a political persecution, but it is really the best of and the worst of the bureaucracy in action. They wanted to punctuate the fact that this was a routine law enforcement action, stripped of any political overtones, and yet they got exactly the opposite.
Yeah, because this is a witch hunt.
Well, wait. How could you think about this and think that this would tamp down the circus atmosphere? It would reduce the political polarization, the concern about this being a political persecution, doing something that has never been done
in the history of our country.
And you think that this is a way to demonstrate to the American people a routine law enforcement action. There's no such thing as a routine law enforcement action that comes with the adjective unprecedented. The thinking, if this is true, the thinking on this is just fascinating. The second unnamed official, senior intel official, who was briefed on the investigation and the operation, according to Newsweek, they were seeking to avoid any media circus. So even though everything made sense bureaucratically and the FBI feared the documents might be destroyed, they also got the very firestorm they sought to avoid in ignoring the fallout. I don't know how you can conceive of an operation like this
and think that it's going to go below the radar.
Yeah, what?
No one's going to know.
What?
And it's Trump.
That is just stunning.
And NBC was reporting what they found so far, a letter from Kim Jong-un, a cocktail napkin, and a birthday party dinner menu. Oh, so sinister.
Smoking guns, sounds like to me.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. And why? And when President Obama left the White House, he took 30 million documents with him from D.C. to Chicago, and he said he would digitize the records. You know, there'd be transparency for the world to see. And to date, there's been nothing released.
Davis Hanson was on Fox this morning or the other morning. VDH, I thought, really gave a tour de force on just the state of everything, using the raid as a jumping off point to talk about where we are in America more generally. And I wish he would get up, you know, be on the West Coast and get up before 9 o'clock so he could join us again like he used to. But the commentary from VDH, you know, it's not dissimilar from what you've heard on this show. And if VDH is saying it, then we're definitely over the target. Take a listen.
They believe they're morally superior to America, and therefore any means necessary are justifiable for their morally superior ends. Right now, we don't have the rule of law in Washington. Whether you're targeted or exempt depends on your ideology. So we, in the past, when there was a dispute over the archives, the presidential papers, Barack Obama just said, I'm not going to turn them over, the freedom of information. He spent $30 million resisting efforts to do that. George Bush had an executive order and said, you know what, I'm not going to do this. And that was adjudicated. And now we go after a president and go to his house with 30 agents. In the past, when a high official was called for a congressional subpoena, Eric Holder just said, I'm not going, and I'm not turning over any of this fast and furious. The idea that you would put him in shackles or you'd confront him with his family and grab his phone is just ridiculous. But this is what we're doing on ideological basis. And when you start to do that, you don't have a democracy anymore.
Oh, that is so well said.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. We don't have a democracy anymore, despite all the efforts by the left to save our democracy, because that's what they cloak themselves in with their authoritarian and imperious behavior.
They're delusional. I mean, mainstream media yesterday, what's her name, Stephanie Ruhle, say, well, no, this wasn't a raid. This was just a search warrant.
Yeah, and right, the execution of a search warrant authorized by a judge.
No, it was a raid. They were armed, lady.
VDH on the FBI. Take a listen.
The FBI is beyond redemption. It's all of its bureaus and its institutions have to be farmed out and broken up. If you have a warrant, an FBI warrant, there's no guarantee that that has not been altered. If you subpoena and you want FBI records on phones with a Mueller, they will be wiped clean. If you want disinterested legal counsel, look at Lisa Page and Peter Strzok. If you're the FBI and you want to find out why Hillary Clinton has hired a foreign national to find dirt on a political opponent, then you will hire that same foreign national. And you look at the last four directors. We just saw Christopher Wray, and he just stonewalled every question, and then he flew on an FBI plane, our plane, a luxury jet, because he had to go to his own vacation spot. He took over, remember, from Andrew McCabe. What did he do? He lied four times to federal investigators, and his wife was running for an office with Clinton-related PAC money while he was investigating Hillary Clinton's email scandal. He took over from James Comey, who leaked confidential memos written on FBI devices to the media. And then when he was called before Congress on 245 occasions, he said he didn't know or didn't remember. Anybody listening to this tries out with the IRS and they're going to go to jail. And he took over from Robert Mueller, whose entire special counsel case was based on two premises. The information that was false in the Steele dossier and the shenanigans of the Clinton-hired GPS disinformation firm. And when he was asked specifically, he said under oath he knew nothing about either entity. And so this is very ironic, because all of this is destroying this country. And it comes from the people who warned us, democracy dies in darkness. And they have descended upon us the greatest cloud of autocracy and illiberality in the history of this republic.
Bob in Grays Lake, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Waukegan. It was Malcolm from Grays Lake. My alias.
Oh, okay.
But how the hell am I supposed to follow VDH, man? I mean, you
tell can do it.
Call in, you tell people to call in and give an opinion, then you put him on, and you blow everybody out of the water.
Wow.
I mean, my God.
You can do it.
Yeah, I mean, if they had a plant, if they had a mole or a plant, or they had FBI agents in his basement culling through his papers. What's to say one of them didn't stick incriminating papers in their pants and take it into his house and hide it somewhere? Like VDH said, nobody's going to believe anything from the FBI anymore. It's ridiculous. I mean, that's basically all I got to say. I love your program in the morning. You keep us informed and on straight and narrow. So. I look forward to your program every morning. Up for it. So
thanks for the call, Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Text messages come in. The mole ate the popcorn.
Is that Bobby Rush's popcorn? They used the mole that ate Bobby Rush's popcorn. They sent it down.
Another text message.
West Palm.
Dan and Amy, Barron is the mole.
Could be.
Could be.
But yeah. Barron turned state's evidence, maybe. Yeah, I always thought, I've always said that Barron's running the whole operation.
I know.
By the way, have you seen how tall that kid is?
He's got to be, I think he's 6'8".
No, I think he's like, I think he's taller than that. I think he's 6'9", 6'10".
Wow.
They said a picture of him at some event at Mar-a-Lago a couple weeks ago. He's just like towering over everybody there.
He's tall.
Get a basketball in that kid's hands already.
Who do you think the mole is, Dan?
Well, but I already said it's Avenatti.
Oh.
Or check to see if he's on work release. Well, I think they're probably using Avenatti, or maybe they're smuggling him in, and then they smuggle him back to the prison. I don't know.
What if it's a cleaning lady or somebody? I mean, who knows?
Right. Yeah. Look for the cleaning
butler
lady with the Groucho Marx glasses on. that's about the quality of this operation and the thinking behind it based on the these unnamed officials that spoke to Newsweek. Something else, too, just to continue to add layers here. Again, we got Strzok and Page, just mentioned by VDH with respect to the Russian collusion matter. And now we got Thibault and Auten with respect to the Hunter Biden investigation, trying to spike it by labeling evidence disinformation, or at least slow it down. Now we have another whistleblower who's come forward with the name of an FBI official who pressured agents to label cases as domestic violent extremism because, of course, domestic violent extremism.
Our parents at school board meetings.
Yeah, and white supremacy. These have been identified as the greatest threat to our democracy from the democracy saviors. Jill Sanborn, who we've heard from before, she's very good at stonewalling, along with Chris Wray when she has had the occasion to testify on the Hill, who now works for Roku. Isn't that nice? Was there FBI more than two decades, one of two officials a whistleblower has identified as, quote, exerting pressure on agents to reclassify cases as domestic violent extremism matters. The letter was written to House Judiciary Committee ranking member Jim Jordan and Rep. Committee member Mike Johnson, a Republican from Louisiana. This is, you know, now more grist for the mill with respect to the politicization from the upper reaches of the FBI to, well, throughout the agency. So we can do this whole, you know, 90-how-many-ever percent of the 40,000 FBI people are great Americans doing good work and so on and so forth. And that's all well and good, but it doesn't much matter when you have rot at the top that informs the culture under which all those otherwise good people are working. Chuck in Delavan, Wisconsin.
Hey, ever since I turned my petitions in, my buddies I talked to on the phone, they're constantly clicking and everything. They're recording me right now.
That's because you haven't paid your bill. You haven't paid your phone bill.
Well, it's that. But also, I went out just to outsmart them. I've got two burner phones, so they haven't got into them yet. So I talk about my politics and getting everything ready to go on my burner phone. So they haven't got them yet. But I wouldn't want them in my girlfriend's underwear drawer. I heard that they were in Donald Weiss's underwear drawer.
Yeah.
Yeah, in her underwear drawer. I wouldn't want them in her.
No.
This is an attack on everybody. Not just people don't realize what goes on when Alien Gonzalez's uncle had that gun pointed at him. That's why all the Cubans voted for Trump. They bombed Serbia, our fellow Christian brothers, and that Clinton did, and that's why all the Orthodox people voted for Trump. You just ignited everybody throughout the United States. That was like there's somebody in your home. Thank you very much.
All right. Hey, Chuck, if somebody named Donnie Brasco shows up to volunteer in your campaign, just be suspicious. All right. Thank you.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Our buddies over at the Edgar County Watchdogs, Edgar County, Illinois, Amy, the yes. county seat is?
We rock, you don't.
The county seat?
It's county seat.
Not the county motto. I don't, but I'm not sure it's we rock, you don't. Well, I don't know if that's
made
it.
Made that up.
Paris.
Oh.
Paris, Illinois. Okay. You may remember. You know, East Central Illinois, Edgar County. These are two guys who have taken it upon themselves to serve as citizen journalists after, you know, careers in other fields. And we've had him on the show before. I think it was Kirk Allen who said, you know, simple philosophy, a simple approach to journalism. Are you ready for this? If only the leading lights of the D.C. press corps, the Maggie Habermans of the world and so forth, were as focused on the pursuit of the truth as the Edgar County Watchdogs, a couple of Joes down in East Central Illinois. Two questions. Who says, and what evidence do you have?
Pretty basic.
To every claim.
Basic journalism 101.
Every claim, every story. Who you says, what evidence do you have? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you take it from there. Well, they've got a story, John Kraft and Kirk Allen, the Watchdogs, do, about State Senator Michael Hastings.
This guy.
A good Democrat socialist represents southwest suburbs, Lockport, New Lenox, Mokena, Orland Park, Tinley Park, Frankfort, Homer, Richton Park, Matson, Homewood, Flossmoor, Park Forest, Olympia Fields, Country Club Hills. Suburban families. Michael Hastings, the son of Kyle Hastings, who's been the mayor of Orland Hills, also a Democrat since I think since Orland Hills was incorporated. He's been there about 100 years or so. Michael Hastings, state senator, good Democrat, up-and-comer.
He was pictured with Valerie Jarrett at Barack Obama's victory party in 2012.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Michael Hastings is seeking to seal a Frankfort police report. Why? Why? And why is the Cook County State's Attorney's Office getting involved on his behalf?
Mm-hmm. What?
Illinois Senator Michael Hastings has filed a civil case in his private capacity for discovery in Will County, naming the City of Frankfort, Will County, and Jane Doe's as defendants. This is filed by an attorney in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office using the office or the name of the office in his filing. Civil matter? Why would the Cook County State Senator's Office be interested in assisting the filing of a petition on behalf of a state senator from Will County in his private capacity against a municipality who is also fighting in Will County Circuit Court for the withholding of certain police records that were requested by the Edgar County Watchdogs? Huh. You can't get a public record? Why not? Why not, Mike? Within his motion, Hastings claims defamation and related torts from the publication of false statements of fact in a police report the Frankfort police prepared on or about June 20th of last year, 2021. So again, Hastings is wanting to sue the Frankfort Police Department for what police officers wrote in a police report and their dissemination of that report. Well, what could it be? Why so concerned about the contents of some police report?
Because he's up for an election.
In Frankfort. In district. Huh. Oh, maybe this is it.
Yeah, what's this skinny?
The police report indicates Hastings' wife complained of him being verbally abusive and that he battered her. He claims those to be false. From among the unredacted copies, the police officer simply wrote that Hastings' wife was informing them of what she says had occurred. Wait a second. We're supposed to believe women, right?
Are we supposed to? Hillary Clinton said that. We have to believe the accused.
Below are below the fold, if you will, below the redaction. Accusations made against Hastings by his wife. They are apparently going through a divorce. Hastings was accused of a verbal altercation in which he used the words bitch and whore while filming her with the children present in the home. Nice. He battered her. He placed her in a chokehold, neck restraint, and slammed her body into a door multiple times. She did not call the police at the time because she feared for her safety. She also didn't report it at the time because she didn't want it all over the media since Hastings is a state senator. Huh.
Well, Frankfurt officers did come to their home in June of last year.
Right.
Yeah. And she told them that, again, that her husband was emotionally and verbally abusive.
Yeah.
And that he battered her.
Placing her in a chokehold, neck restraint, slammed her body into a door multiple times. Well, that doesn't look good on a young man's record. I don't know what the truth of it is. But
well, divorces can get ugly.
What would you rather do in that case if you're being falsely accused? Would you rather try to seal it and hide it from public view? Or would you rather, and what do you think is judicious, would you rather just deal with it straight away? This is a public record. You're going to hear allegations. We're going through a divorce. I didn't do this. Or I did behave badly, and I regret that, and I lost my temper, and I shouldn't have, and so on and so forth. You explain and make apologies and amends the best you can? Or do you try to use your power? And apparently your friends filed by an attorney in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office as so identified in the filing using the office. Use your friends to remove it from public view.
Well, one of Hastings' attorneys is a retired assistant state's attorney with the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Maybe that's why he hired him, too. Who knows?
Well, I'm sure it is, but a civil filing and the invocation of the office. I mean, a sort of an unmistakable signal that's being sent, wouldn't you say? You know, I understand how sensitive all these rock-ribbed Democrat socialist voters are in these suburban communities with their pea hats on. And how concerned they are about the plight of abused women and the taking serious allegations of abuse, right? I know how serious they are because these are the same voters who elevate legislators, who elevate Chris Welch to be the Speaker of the House. Chris Welch, who there's a police report, speaking of police reports, Hillside, about him slamming the head of his girlfriend on a counter.
Yeah, he apparently grabbed her hair from behind and just...
No, I know that
it's a Formica counter. Somebody told me, oh, it was Formica. I'm like, oh my God, who cares if it's granite or for? Please.
So what's the story again? Tell me the story about the standard. Women, in particular, but Democrats in general. What's the standard here? When it comes to allegations of abuse. Evidence of abuse, police reports. You know, this is being made an issue now in the Senate race in Georgia against Herschel Walker. So I just want to understand what the standards are. And I want to understand how people can look themselves in the mirror and tell themselves over and over again, they're a good person who's trying to do good things and elevate good people. And then give some people a pass based on their politics and carry on about others based on their politics. It's just so exhausting. And again, it's time, I think, particularly 90 days from an election, that these remarks be offered in pointed fashion, not just by me to people I don't know, but by you to people you do know. Lockport, New Lenox, Mokena, Orland, Tinley, Frankfort, Homer Glen, Joliet, Richardson Park, University Park, Matson, Homewood, Flossmoor, Park Forest, Olympia Fields, Country Club Hills, Hazelcrest, Markham, Oak Forest. Now, how much more are you willing to do for these jackals that you've put into public office, I wonder. How much more are you willing to, how much more water are you willing to carry? How many more blind eyes must you turn?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick
comment. Chris Welch, how embarrassing for you, Democrats in Illinois. How embarrassing a thug and a grifter like Chris Welch as the Speaker of the House. You actually did worse in replacing Madigan than you did in abiding Madigan for 40 years. Always finding the new low, the new bottom, aren't we? And what are you going to do with Michael Hastings? Oh, I guess we give Chris Welch a pass because we play identitarian politics. What about Michael Hastings? He's just a pasty honky from the Southwest burbs. Political clout, the old man. Don't want any ugliness, anything interrupting the celebration of abortion on demand and casinos and marijuana expansion. You know, all the staples in Illinois. It's made it such a attractive state to locate and stay. I mean, honestly. Oh, and so let's play whataboutism. Let's play it. Whataboutism. What about Herschel Walker, Dan? Oh, thank you for asking. What about Herschel Walker? Here's the ad that's being run by Never Trump Republicans against her. Never Trump Republicans. Just Never Trumpers. I think we can stop saying Republicans because Never Trump Republicans, that's an oxymoron. Once you throw in with the left on some things, as you've seen with the Kinzingers of the world, you throw in with them on everything. So Never Trumpers posting this third party ad against Herschel Walker, a old interview with Herschel Walker's ex-wife.
Do you think you know Herschel Walker? Well, think again. Listen to what his ex-wife had to say about him.
His eyes would become very evil. The guns and knives. I got into a few choking things with him. The first time he held the gun to my head, he held the gun to my temple and said he was going to blow my brains out.
That's not good. That demands a response. Here's Herschel Walker's response.
People told me politics is dirty. They're right. My opponents launched a dirty attack ad. They dug up an old video and took it out of context. My opponents think they're hurting me, but I'm glad they did this ad because it gives me an opportunity to end the stigma around mental health. Here's the truth. My ex-wife, Cindy, and I are good friends, along with her husband and my wife. And I am grateful for all the support Cindy gave me during the hardest time of my life. I came forward by then in an effort to save lives and to help people who were struggling. We need to end the stigma around mental health. Let me say this to anyone watching, all the veterans and people who are suffering. Your life has value. There is hope, and you are not alone. I would rather listen to a friend talk about his struggles than to go to their funeral. That's why I wrote my book about my life. But my opponents, they don't care about the truth. The fact is, Senator Warnock can't talk about his accomplishments. He's failed Georgia, so he and his friends will lie and deceive. We're going to fight back with the truth, but I need your help.
So in 2008, Herschel Walker wrote a memoir called Breaking Free, which My Life with Dissociative Identity Disorder, which speaks to the mental health challenges that he had. And that's what he's referencing there. It's interesting that he said that he and his that ex-wife, who's in featured in the video, that interview that she gave that was excerpted, that he and his current wife and she and her current husband are good friends.
That's great.
I'd like to hear from her. That's what I would say if I was on Herschel Walker's campaign, I think.
Because how old is that interview? It looks really old.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to hear from her. I'd like to hear, I mean, you know, you don't want to force, like, try to call somebody out or make them do something they don't want to do if she doesn't want to come forward, if she doesn't want to be public. I understand that, too. But, you know, even just something that confirms that what he said is true, I'd like to hear from her. Would you like to hear from Michael Hastings' wife?
Yeah.
Would you like to hear from Chris Welch's ex-girlfriend, Democrats in Illinois? See, that's how you do one standard that applies to everybody.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka, today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and big guy reacting to the CPI number yesterday. We get the PPI, producer price index number, this morning, so we'll be looking forward to that. But, I mean, I guess, what's the big deal? Why even worry about what the PPI number is? Because
inflation's over.
That's exactly right.
I want to say a word about the news that came out today relative to the economy. Actually, I just want to say a number. Zero. Today, we received news that our economy had 0% inflation in the month of July.
That's, you know what? That's great news, because then we don't need to spend $700 billion to reduce it.
All right. What happens to the Inflation Reduction Act? Right. You're right.
For more on this and other matters, pleased to be joined by Phil Kirpin, president of the American Commitment and chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition. Phil, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you.
So we can, put that $700 billion to other use, Phil, maybe border security or something.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys will be shocked to learn this. The Inflation Reduction Act had nothing to do with it reducing inflation.
Is that right?
Isn't that shocking? No, the House is going to pass this on Friday. They're going to pass it tomorrow, barring some shocking surprise. Although, you know, they can only lose, I think, 4 House Democrats and pass it. So, you know, maybe we'll get a miracle and they'll need to regroup and we'll get a little more time. But it's unlikely because Nancy Pelosi is a pretty good vote counter and Democrats are pretty good at following directions from on high and their party leadership. And so I think they're going to pass this pile of garbage.
Well, I know 60 is the new 40, but is 8.5 the new zero?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because we've been talking about the 12-month number, right? And now we're, you know, now we only want to talk about the one-month number because we had this month where gasoline prices eased considerably, and that kind of outweighed a lot of other things. Well, you know, one of the main reasons they eased so much, a lot of people canceled their summer trips because they couldn't afford them. So we saw a lot of demand destruction from the very high price, and that brought the price down. I'm not sure that's something we want to celebrate. But the interesting thing is if we're doing it as a 1 month instead of a 12-month, that means June wasn't, you know, 9.1. It was 17-something because that was the one-month increase. So if you get this huge increase in 1 month, and then it stays flat the next month, I'm not sure that's something you should do a victory dance about.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's delusional. I mean, don't you think even Democrats heard what he said yesterday and were left scratching their head?
You know, they're very good at following whatever they're supposed to say. I mean, it's amazing. You see these media people just parrot whatever the idiotic White House talking point is. And, you know, I don't know. Look, I mean, the White House sent out a press release yesterday. That was a Time magazine article saying it's totally false that the White House wants to add 87,000 IRS agents. Except the number came from the White House. That was their number.
Right.
How many they'll add when this bill passes. So, I mean, it's like there's no consistency in anything that they're doing right now. They're desperate to grab for anything that even looks like positive news, and they've got this echo chamber. So to the extent that some people still pay attention to these corrupt left-wing media outlets, they don't need to be consistent or logical, and they've got the ability to assert whatever they want and have it be repeated. Now,
yeah.
I think that most people are done with that, and it doesn't work on the majority of people anymore, but you know, they I think, you know, they sort of believe their own echo chamber, and so they keep doing this stuff.
Well, we're going to find out. But, I mean, of course, they also guaranteed that no one making less than $400,000 would be audited by the IRS, which is great news for everybody to cheat on their taxes who makes less than $400,000.
Right, except, you know, there was actually a Republican amendment that was put up to take the promise that they had made and put it actually in the law, put it in the bill they were voting on, that none of the new agents would audit anyone under 400,000. Uh-huh. It failed on a party line vote.
Imagine that.
Democrat actually voted against it.
Yeah, imagine that. It's sort of like the border security bait and switch that those target that was done in the Senate for those target Democrat senators up for re-election. I mean, it's just right. The dishonesty is just unbounded. And you also wrote about the price controls on Medicare to reduce, quote unquote, reduce the cost of prescription drugs, because that's one of the real givebacks that is attempting to be sold to the American public. We're going to come in. We're going to negotiate drug prices. That's going to result in reduced prescription drug costs for Medicare beneficiaries.
Yeah, actually, the focus of that provision is not reducing the cost for people on Medicare. It's reducing the cost for government so that they can take the money that Medicare was supposed to spend on prescription drugs and instead spend it on, you know, Obamacare bailouts and, you know, green energy giveaways and all the other spending in the bill. And so it really is a plan to reduce the amount that Medicare spends on prescription drugs by about $300 billion and spend it on all this other stuff. And it's interesting that they, you know, this is another situation where they've got, you know, very pliant media that sells this as a positive. Look at all the savings that we're getting for you.
Right.
But, you know, the way they do this, it's not through greater efficiency. It's not through, you know, reforming the program in some positive way. They just have government set the price. And, you know, government price setting always causes shortages. That's an answer to inflation. I think it's pretty frightening that they're doing price controls for anything, because I don't think they're going to stop with just one sector. I think this is going to be their supposed answer to inflation is, oh, we'll just have government set lower prices. But, of course, you know, government price controls always cause either shortages, reductions in quality, or black market activity. Those are the only possibilities. That's what happens when government sets a price below the market clearing price. And I think that in the case of price controls on medicines, because the marginal cost of a medicine that already exists is really, really low, we're not going to get shortages of the medicines that already exist. We're going to get shortages of new medicines because we're undercutting the incentive to develop them and go through the whole crazy FDA process and bring them to market. And, you know, the Congressional Budget Office has this ridiculous lowball estimate. They say this will only prevent 15 new medicines from being developed. You know, if you take $300 billion pretty much directly out of the pharmaceutical industry and it costs about $1 billion to bring a new drug to market, it's going to be more like 300 medicines that are prevented from being developed, not 15. And so, you know, there are a bunch of different models. The number is going to probably be in the hundreds of medicines that won't exist if this stands. I think that probably, I'm cynical enough to think that probably what happens is the price controls never really bite because the drug companies have too much political influence and they prevent it and they get the price that they want anyway. And so it ends up just being a lie and a budget scam, and it ends up being deficit spending instead of a pay for. But either way, either the price controls quote unquote work and you get way less new prescription drugs, which is terrible for seniors, terrible for people on Medicare, terrible, you know, for quality of life in general, or it ends up not doing anything and it just becomes another hole that's deficit spending or money creation. So it's not good. It's a little ridiculous. It's probably the but, you know, if they get away with it, which it looks like they're about to do and pass this thing, I'd be worried that it's not just going to be drug prices that they try to, you know, quote unquote, fix by having government set the price, but that we might be on a pathway towards a Nixon-style economy-wide price control order. Although, you know, now that inflation's over,
yeah,
maybe I don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, stop worrying. Embrace it. You've written a lot about COVID over the last 2.5 years, and I wanted to, sort of do a stop, look, and listen on viruses, the Centers for Control, all this stuff. I know we're still grappling with the national emergency over monkeypox, but there's something else. Lei Vi is a virus that's been identified in China's Shandong and Henan provinces in the northeast. and 35 people have been infected. And my question to you is, should we take evasive action to lock down our economy and the schools?
Yeah, we probably need a global lockdown. Did you notice that the picture of this new virus looks exactly like the COVID picture?
Yes, I did.
It's amazing.
Yes. It's an impersonator. It's a COVID impersonator. Well, you know, the impersonation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I hope COVID's not upset.
You know, anyone who didn't learn the lesson that we should never have anything like these lockdowns again is, I don't know, willfully blind to reality.
And well, they're lost.
We've got a lot of them, and they're still in positions of power. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll try these things again. I mean, the thing is that I think that even though we haven't seemed to learn much, especially in liberal areas in this country, the most of the world is never going to do anything like that again. And I think it's much harder to do it when you can't say everybody's doing it. I mean, you remember how they sort of, there were all these dominoes, yeah, one country after another. And I don't see that kind of thing happening again, to be honest. I hope. I mean, we're certainly not seeing it with monkeypox, even though they've issued all the same, you know, emergency declarations and so forth. I don't think it's going to happen with this new one. You know, but who knows? Maybe they'll try. I'm more concerned, to be honest, that we get into fall and winter and the COVID numbers rise again and they say we're going to go back to the well one more time.
Yeah, return to the scene of the crime. So yesterday, CPS, Chicago Public Schools, announced that this is big news, that students and faculty are not required to get COVID vaccines. That's a switch, because by July 15th, everyone had to have their third shot or lose their job. So now those people could be reinstated. Weekly testing won't be required, and masks will not be required in most situations. You can still sign up to test at school, but here's the deal. So they think, you know, oh, yeah, things are getting better, but they're not, because then 2 days before that, they sent out an email saying, if you are in a classroom where someone has COVID and you're not vaccinated, either test to stay in that class or you have to leave for 5 days. So we're still going to quarantine kids, and most of the kids in Chicago Public Schools are black and brown. 66% are not vaccinated.
There's also still a no contact order with CPS kids and the big guy.
What do you mean?
They're not allowed to hang out with Joe Biden since he gets COVID every other day.
Right. I think, what did he have it for? What do you have, 15 straight days? Pretty impressive.
9 days straight.
Well, you know, D.C. has the vaccine mandate. So if they stick to their guns, they're going to exclude about 40% of minority students when schools start in a couple weeks here. I don't think we're actually going to see mass exclusions of students. I think they're going to come up with, we're trying to get them into compliance or something. But we'll see. I mean, it is crazy that we're continuing to see vaccine mandates in any context, when you consider that it's very clear now that the vaccine has no effect on preventing transmission, and every vaccinated person seems to be getting the current strains. And so it's very strange but you get sort of bureaucratic inertia in some of these places. And this idea of doing any kind of contact trace, whether it's, testing or masking, whatever this stuff is, it's just completely insane for a virus that's literally everywhere. And probably will be for the rest of time, more or less.
Yeah, we learned that from.
Everyone's had it also.
We learned that from KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, that contact tracing is very difficult. When she got it, she had no idea where she got it.
You can't do it in the White House, but you're going to do it in Chicago Public Schools.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Also, this, too, speaking of what everybody's doing, the Danes, Denmark is ending COVID vaccinations for anyone 18 and younger. And by that, I don't mean that you don't have to. I mean, you're not allowed to. It's not going to be available to get vaccinated if you're under 18 in Denmark.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm more sort of libertarian on this stuff. I don't have a problem with it being available, even though I'm extremely against all of these mandates. But, you know, the risk benefit is very questionable for younger people, because the benefit is essentially zero, especially because everyone's already had the virus, and it's pretty mild for children in almost always anyway. And the risk seems to be non-zero, because especially for younger men, you've got the cardiac issues. And so, you know, it's not crazy for, you know, a regulatory body to say, you know what, the kids have all had the virus anyway. We're going to stop trying to chase every last cold with a vaccine that doesn't really prevent them anyway. I don't have a big problem with it, although, you know, ideally to me, I don't have a problem with parents making the decision either.
Neither do I. But they've done a complete 180, and you have some people doing complete 180s now. Not only are we not mandating it, we're prohibiting it, which is that's the definition of 180, and it indicates. Regardless of whether you think that's too heavy-handed, it indicates what they thought they knew versus what they think they know now.
Well, we've done a very poor job of generating reliable knowledge about COVID for the last 2.5 years. And instead of running the studies that we need to run and having them be well-designed to actually produce, you know, usable data, we just have one garbage study after another of heavily confounded observational data, and everyone sort of fights over which sort of low-quality study is right instead of doing the high-quality studies. And I mean, we didn't even have a prospective study of the myocarditis, the cardiac issue in children, anywhere in the world until Thailand just did one. Now, no offense, I mean, you know, good for Thailand, but, you know, why hasn't a study like that been done in the U.S. or in Europe? It's kind of insane. So I just think, you know, we're not asking the questions that we need to ask because we don't want to know what the answers are, and so we're all just sort of flying blind.
Speaking of issues still very much in controversy, and we saw this play out again last week with Rand Paul leading a Senate hearing on the topic of the research that was underwritten by the federal government and whether or not that was essentially underwriting the development of COVID-19. The chairman of The Lancet, the British medical journal, Lancet's COVID-19 commission, it says he's pretty convinced the pandemic's origin is from U.S. lab biotechnology, which Jeffrey Sachs were talking about. And so this is sort of the same thing, seems to me, as saying that, yeah, we provided gain-of-function research funding for scientists working for the Chinese communists.
Well, I mean, we know that they got NIH grants, you know, through EcoHealth Alliance, and, you know, sort of the question has been, you know, whether that work was related to this. It's always been a highly suspect coincidence that this outbreak started in the city where that research was going on. We've had a couple of recent studies that try to debunk or disprove that possibility, but, you know, I look forward to Rand Paul's investigations, if he gets that gavel and Republicans are in charge of the Senate, and maybe we'll learn something. I think at this point we're never going to find out much because the Chinese have had such a long time to destroy any evidence that might have existed, and I think it's always going to be a little bit mysterious, unfortunately.
Hmm. He is Phil Kirpin, president of American Commitment, chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition. Phil, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That sizzling housing market in Chicago is about to get just that much hotter, about 2.5% hotter.
Uh-huh. We're looking at a property tax raise. Yesterday, Mayor Lightfoot, she announced her budget for 2023. Celebrating, Dan, you know why? Because we have a budget gap of only $127.9 million, and last year was $733 million.
I'm happy to tell you
that
our anticipated 2023 budget gap is the lowest in recent memory.
Again, just delusional. We have to pay for pensions. So she's raising it 2.5% for everybody across the board. And that it's going to, you know, generate $43 million for the city of Chicago. But it's an election year. It's very strange to raise property taxes in an election year. But she had to do it. Dan, you got to do your part, okay?
As a result of our hard work over the past 3.5 years, and despite a global pandemic, the resulting economic meltdown and related loss of revenue, we persevered, stayed true to our values, and have cleared the city's budget of decades of deferred liabilities.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Really, more detail on that, please. I'm sure somebody asked that when you cleared the city of decades of deferred liabilities. So what are the funding levels of the city's police and fire pension funds, for example? And what are you doing to clear the decades of unfunded liabilities? What kind of progress does your budget achieve in that direction? I know that this is, you know, very magnanimous on Triple Threat's part because, of course, she implemented a policy of tying property tax increases to inflation, you know, right, like we tie pensions to inflation, cost of living increases. And
but
capped, she's
capped at 5%.
Yeah, capped at 5. So she's only imposing half of that increase on Chicago residents. That's great news. You know, before the pandemic, Chicago was projected to be, in terms of the vitality of the housing market,
yeah,
was projected to be number 200 out of the 200 major metropolitan areas in the country, behind cities that are real destination places like Cleveland. But okay. All right. So another 2.5%. Oh, you know, what's another 2.5% for the good of the order? Well, I don't know. You know, the negative multiplier effect of property taxes, even though you have commercial subsidizing residential in Cook County, this obviously is going to be imposed. You're going to see property tax increases on both sides of that. But it's just the negative multiplier effect. It just continues.
Well, what are we getting for our money?
It continues. Well, first, before you even get to that, it continues the attenuation of property value. So I don't understand how people shrug their shoulders, I guess.
And just bend over and take it.
And as we've detailed on the show before, you know, these property poor areas get hit the hardest, where you have endemic crime and low property values. You end up having property tax bills that are 10, 11% of your property value. Those properties are literally worth zero. Zero.
Yep.
And then they're going to come over the top and say, what do we need? A Marshall Plan for the west and south sides of Chicago, these decrepit neighborhoods that are either have been abandoned substantially or are crime-ridden or both. This is nothing. Well, this is nothing except more of the same, except a guarantee of the continuing descent.
What do you get for your money, too? Oh, great. You're going to increase my property tax. Are police going to come when we call? We're going to have to wait
right. An
hour, sometimes 3 hours after someone is carjacked. I mean, we're not, and schools are better. No, nothing changes. Everything is the same. And the fact that she touted this as some success story. The reason why the budget deficit wasn't as large was because she got COVID funny money.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same. She's running the same game that Pritzker at the city level, that Pritzker's running at the state level. We did this all without the $185 billion that was drop shipped on the state of Illinois over the last year and a half. I mean, of course, that's not true. And so you've done nothing to repair what is structurally wrong with the city and the state. And you continue to spend beyond means. You continue to promise beyond means, even despite, as we talked about yesterday or the day before, maybe it was the day before with Ted Dabrowski, but the median return for public sector pension funds minus almost 8% with the fiscal year ending June 30. And that's a real big number when your actuaries, as the Enron actuaries in Chicago and Illinois do here, assume, for budgeting purposes, assume a 7% to the positive compounded annual return for these pension funds, which is why, in part, Illinois has the largest unfunded liabilities when it comes to public sector pensions in the country. And we have for some time, and I know nobody cares and nobody believes, I mean, you know, nobody. A few people does this register, and few people think that ultimately the math will tell the story. Okay. And then, you know, they'll just continue boiling your property like a frog a little bit at a time, just chipping away at that value. And you're going to be surprised when you go to sell. You're going to be surprised as so many people have over the years when you go to sell. We've done story after story over the last several cycles. Nothing has changed. It's just getting worse. And the difference between border communities, if you live in Antioch or you live across the border in Wisconsin, if you live in, you know, on the Indiana border on the Illinois side versus the Indiana side, Aurora, Illinois versus Aurora, Colorado, similarly sized houses and similarly sized communities and so forth. I mean, the numbers are just staggering, but I know the numbers are don't generate much sentimentality, and I know that's the basis on which, at least recently, a majority of Illinoisans make their decisions in terms of political leadership. So I don't know what to tell you. All we can do is tell the stories and provide the data, and then people have to make their own decisions about whether they care about their kids' schools, whether they care about their property value, whether they care about their take-home pay. I don't know. If you don't care, whether they care about price at the pump or price at the grocery store, if you don't care about any of that stuff, you know, it's a tough sell. If you just, you know, want to be a pincushion, then you're in the right place. Kip and Stillman Valley, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, listen, Dan, thanks for taking my call, Dan and Amy. Listen, isn't this all kind of maybe a real devious plan with the world order, and especially in sanctuary cities?
You're thinking too big. Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether they're depressing the value of your homes and that, taxing you out of existence in big metropolitan cities. Why would big guy financers come in and buy up all the property?
Well, there is some. Thanks for the call, Kip. There is some of that with BlackRock. I mean, I agree with that. There is some of that going on, but Chicago and Illinois are unique cases. So let's just focus locally here for a second. And both are unique cases, Chicago and Illinois, because big metropolitan areas in, say, California are still governed by the 1% hard cap on property taxes.
Right.
So it's different even in other, you know, blue states. Now, of course, in terms of the highest overall state and local tax burden, the highest property tax burden, meaning the most aggressive form of slow motion property seizure, you see those in blue states. It's Illinois, it's New Jersey, it's Connecticut, it's New York. But and that's a function of both state and city. But in California is an outlier. We see the same thing with our neighbor to the east in Indiana. It's unique here. Unique. And we also enjoy the highest combined state and local tax burden in the country. It's been that way for some time. And that's despite California, where your state income tax is graduated and goes up to like 13%. Big numbers. And then the comparisons again to states that have zero income tax.
Right.
And what they're able to do.
A lot more home with their paychecks.
Yeah, what they're able to do, not just in terms of, I take home more money, but also then, you know, compare the quality of the government institutions. To your question, Amy, about what do we get for our money? Well, compare what you get for your money in places like Texas or Florida versus Illinois. I don't know. I mean, I just blew in the face on this. We finance government fiefdoms. You throw more money at schools, you finance more government jobs. You're not doing a better job educating kids, as the test scores will attest. And just their general knowledge, you know, measuring their general knowledge and aptitude and skill sets. And I mean, it's just, I don't know what to tell you.
Of our election, if this is going to change in 2020.
It's not going to change. Most units of government in the country, most elected officials in the country. That's the same thing as saying most political fiefdoms in the country.
Most superintendents.
all of this stuff. There's just, you know, the interesting thing will be to see what 2.0 of the parental revolt looks like, if there is a 2.0.
You know who's going to make things better? If you don't like Lori Lightfoot, Chuy Garcia is going to make things better.
Hey.
Yeah, no, he's thinking about running for mayor.
I'm getting a lot of calls, from people across the city to consider it. I'm flattered by that.
But he still loves his job. And Mayor Lightfoot responded to the fact that, you know, how do you feel that Chuy Garcia is going to enter the race? Remember, he ran in 2015 against Rahm Emanuel.
People are going to jump in. This is a silly season. It's going to happen. I remain focused on making sure that I deliver every single day for the residents of the city. And if I continue to do that, I feel very optimistic about reelection.
Yeah, it's a silly season, man.
Well, exactly. 2.5% property tax increase. He's delivering every day. She's focused on the delivery. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chewy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, Lori Lightfoot's numbers are pretty bad.
I know. And I think she knows that, too. But keep going.
But that doesn't mean in a crowded field that she can't win with the sort of quality of the candidates and maybe campaigns to this point. We'll see. Maurice and Berwyn.
Dan, if you guys just ran on reducing property value on the south and west side, and me personally, I think what pensions have done in Illinois, it should be a crime. Why not just have one of you guys say, hey, look, what we're going to do is we're going to go with 401ks, we're going to grandfather some people in, and we're done with pensions in Illinois. I voted Democratic most of my life. You have me. But you're right. It's ridiculous. What? Hey, go big or go home, finally. Why not run on that?
Well, Maurice, it's interesting you say that because I did run a campaign like the sort of general campaign for Republican legislative candidates in 2018 on that very topic, advertised all over the radio. We told these stories. We ran stories, did mailers by district. And you know what happened? Suburbanites and urbanites alike, they just hate Trump more than they love their property or they love their school or they love their community. The Trump hatred was what motivated voters, and you know, you saw Democrat socialists in charge extend their supermajorities in the General Assembly. So we've tried to make the case. We've tried to provide. We've done it. We've made the case. We've spent the money. We've presented the data. We've told the stories. And you know what people say? I don't care about my property. Trump's bad man. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Gosh, I mean, it's unfortunate that people cannot.
Tell me about it, Maurice. Your exhaustion, your exhale, your exhalation is exactly my thought.
I'm a conservative Democrat, which by today's standards just pretty much shoved me almost to being a Republican by today's standards. But it's unfortunate because that's a good ticket for you guys. But that the T word is a difficult sell for you guys as well. So I'm with you on that one. So you're on the right track, guys.
Have
a good day.
Thanks for the call, Maurice. Appreciate it. Well, we'll try. We'll try again. It seems like a simple question. Do you care about the value of your home? And then you get a resounding no. I don't know where you go from there. I really don't.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Yesterday we got the consumer price index number, and this is how it was interpreted by the big guy.
I want to say a word about the news that came out today relative to the economy. Actually, I just want to say a number. Zero. Today, we received news that our economy had 0% inflation in the month of July.
Uh-huh. Ooh. Yeah, it came in at 8.5% year over year, but zero over June to July in terms of an increase. We talked about that with Phil Kirpin, the shifting standards of analysis. And, of course, what actually happened and is happening is that people are seeing their real wages decline, the real household income decline. In point of fact, year over year, the average American has seen a 3.6% drop in weekly pay, and that's because of things like breakfast cereal, bread, beef, bacon, chicken, milk, cheese, fruits and vegetables, coffee, butter, all being up double digits year over year in price. So what's the PPI number? Well, drum roll, please. I'll turn it over to our friend Rick Santelli, the Godfather, over on CNBC.
All right, ba-da, here we go. July PPI, final month-over-month demand, down 0.5%. Down 0.5%. Now, a minus sign, unlike yesterday's goose egg, actually means we're lowering a bit. The goose egg yesterday just meant lateral, and the high water mark here was 1.6. That was in March, so we've come down a bit. Now, if you look out, strip out food and energy, it's up 0.2, half of expectations. High water mark in March, up 1.2. Ex-food, energy, and trade, also up 0.2, half expectations. High water mark there going back to January of 21 at up 1%. Now, let's look at the year-over-year numbers, shall we? And these are the biggies. Headline, 9.8%. That's definitely less than the 10.5% we were looking at. The high water mark there, 11.6. That was in March of this year.
So CPI coming down a bit. PPI now coming down a bit. Happy days are here again. We're on track to get to the Fed's target 2% inflation still. I mean, their target is, by the way, 3 years out. But anyway, we're going to start seeing prices come down and purchasing power increase. Is that right? Not so fast. Don't celebrate too soon. And that's not me saying it. That's former Clinton Treasury Secretary Larry Summers saying it.
I think it'd be a mistake for anyone to radically revise their view of the situation based on these numbers. This report's a lot like the report in March, which was followed by very discouraging reports afterwards, making the optimists from March look wrong several months later. So I'm not saying that that's going to happen again, but I think we just need to maintain a sense of uncertainty and wait for the data as it comes. I still think we have a very serious inflation problem.
Well, I don't always agree with Larry Summers, like he supported the quote-unquote Inflation Reduction Act, for example, but I do agree with him about being overly exuberant based on 1 month's worth of data. Let's get the opinion of another market expert, Jonathan Honig, Capitalist Pig, founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund, Fox News contributor, author of A New Textbook for Americanism, The Politics of Ayn Rand. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. What say you?
Hey, Dan and Amy, great to be with you. Look to history. Forget, you know, political persuasion for a moment. Just look to history. I mean, back in the 1970s, inflation actually fell for periods of time. I mean, it's kind of shocking to remember that. But, yeah, from 1974 to 1976, that headline inflation number actually went down by about 50%. I mean, inflation fell from roughly 10% back down to 5% during that period. People were applauding. Only 4 or 5 years later, it was back up to 10, 12, even 14% by some measures. So, you know, this is something you have to look not on a moment-to-moment basis or even a month-to-month basis, but over a long-term period. And on that, Larry Summers is exactly right. Inflation really is the toothpaste, impossible to stuff it back in the bottle once it's gotten in. And for President Biden to say that inflation is zero, I mean, if I said that as a financial advisor, they would put me in the who's cow. I mean, that's straight up. It's not just lying. It's complete duplicity, and it's also obfuscating the real role that government has had in creating inflation in the first place.
I mean, clearly, I don't think, when do you think the last time President Biden went to a grocery store? I mean, none of our government officials, they don't feel the pain because they don't see it. They don't have experience.
When was the last time he passed an Econ 101 course? I don't even think he knows. I think you underestimate how ignorant so many politicians are, even to the presidential level. They don't know what they're talking about in a range of topics.
That's what's so amazing about inflation is that it's not a Wall Street, and I'm a great fan of Rick Santelli, and he follows those numbers so closely, but you don't need to be an economist, Dan and Amy. I mean, you've been talking about this for a year. It's costing the average American household by some measures about $635 extra a month. That's serious money. We're talking about 75 $7,600 a year. And as you said, this is things like, you know, butter up, you know, 10-12%, eggs up 20-30%. This is something that is prompting everyday American households to have to not buy, you know, new clothes for their kids or skip meals on the household each evening. So this is a kitchen table issue not caused by those evil SOBs in Wall Street, but caused by prolific spending in Washington, of which the, I don't know, Inflation Reduction Act, they should call it the Inflation Creation Act. That's exactly what they're doing. History is repeating itself over and over again.
Well, so what do you think about, I mean, assuming it passes tomorrow, despite the fact that we have zero inflation, according to Biden, so assume it passes tomorrow, what do you think the impact will be? You know, the CBO has essentially said it would be negligible, anywhere from 0.1% reduction to 0.1% actual increase in inflation. $700 billion in the grand scheme of things, I mean, it sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but not in the grand scheme of things in a $20 trillion economy. So what impact, if any, do you think it will actually have?
I mean, it will have – I mean, it will have zero impact only to let some politicians pat themselves in the back for a little bit of a while. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, Dan, this is complete – and Dan, I mean, it's complete obfuscation. I mean, it's also frustrating because it's making it more and more difficult for, you know, those of us down here on the ground, those of us who are actually paying taxes and creating wealth to actually make the economy work. I mean, all the economy is at the end of the day, Dan and Amy, it's mutually beneficial income-producing relationships for everyday Americans, and governments getting in the way time and time again. Now, you might say, well, some of the good news is that some of those headline inflation numbers have come down, but the real sickness has not been put back in the bottle at all. And I think that's my fear, is Ben and Amy. We're not in for, you know, one bad quarter, one bad month, but something akin to the 70s, where the real the lifestyle, you know, the ability to live for everyday Americans only went down. That's my fear. That's where we are. And the economy seems to be suggesting it week in and week out, despite a slight uptick in the stock market in recent weeks.
If you see the numbers go down again in August, the PPI and CPI numbers go down again in August, what kind of pressure do you think that puts on Jay Powell to walk back the anticipated 75 basis point increase in late September, interest rate increase?
You know, honestly, Daniel, these types of figures of, in, you know, rates going to 0.75% or 5%, you know, those types of figures really, I think, get lost in the everyday difficulties of Americans literally just trying to not only, as they say, put food on the table, but plan for the future. I mean, what do you think looking out as, you know, not someone who's, you know, wheeling and dealing in Wall Street, but just trying to, I don't know, save? I mean, are you ready to lend money to the government at, you know, for at 3% for the next 10 or 12 years? I mean, you think that's actually going to help, you know, protect your family from inflation, make some money over the long term? Or even if you're trying to invest for that period of time, or, you know, plan for building a new plant, building a new factory. I mean, part of what makes inflation so insidious is not even what are you going to be paying, but how can you plan and invest? Are you really going to hire that extra employee knowing that government's going to go along and tax him, take your wealth, take his or her wealth? So I think, as the old thing goes, Dan, I mean, uncertainty is an evil on Wall Street, and it makes it more difficult to invest, but it makes it impossible to save and possible to even try to create now and in the future. I think that's what's so frustrating now, and I think why that double taxation of inflation is kind of probably quadruple that, because who knows what the situation is going to be given the tax and spend policies Biden is not quadrupling down. It's ad infinitum, on and on and on.
Well, I agree with all that. But if you still see a market rally, the market rally that's, you know, 30 days old continue, and inflation go down again in August, I just want, you know, all this talk about soft landing and Jay Powell and his mystics are going to calibrate rates and their timing on rate increases or decreases just so. And the market is building, you know, the conventional wisdom is that the market has built in these increases and isn't anticipating cuts come next year and so on and so forth. But I just wonder, you know, you're talking about now you would be 6 weeks out from an election. That's September 21st when they next meet to consider another rate hike. And if things are going well, then does he pull back the throttle and say, okay, we don't need to do this. Let's let this thing, you know, continue to build so that we can enjoy this momentum and then ultimately potentially get things, not to use their lingo, but you know where I'm going, get things overheating again such that you have a boomerang on inflation, you know, come October and beyond, like you say, how this it's like handling nitroglycerin here.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, it reminds me so often of, you know, Barney Frank telling us back in 2007, you know, 2006, you know, there's no way in, you know, how you know, the housing market can
right.
explode. And
right.
you know, even a year or two ago, I mean, back then, Washington saying, I don't see any impact of inflation or, you know, so what the warlords and the, you know, the experts in D.C. are saying, Dan, and Annie, it's just always so far removed from those of us, not even on LaSalle Street, but, you know, literally on everyday American Main Street are trying to navigate this economy. So I don't necessarily know what they're going to do with interest rates. My sense is that, and my belief from, you know, an investor and somebody who's living day to day like everyone else, my sense is that the economy is slowing, in fact, pretty dramatically. And those household prices that we're all paying day in and day out, while they might slow slightly, the long-term trend here isn't just reversing. I think it's metastasizing and getting worse. So I'm buckling down just like, you know, Jamie Dimon and Elon Musk and the rest are in terms of trying to plan the long, for the long term and think that this genie is not back in the bottle, not yet and not anytime soon. And although, as you said, Dan, I mean, the market's up and perhaps for the moment those pressures have ebbed, I don't think Jay Powell or anyone else has any idea of where we go next month, next year, or anywhere beyond, given the state of affairs.
He is Jonathan Honig, founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and Fox News contributor, author of A New Textbook of Americanism, The Politics of Ayn Rand. Capitalist Pig, Jonathan Honig, thanks as always.
Be well.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Former Congressman Ron Paul, father of Senator Rand Paul.
Yes, remember him well.
Former presidential candidate. Ron Paul, in between a couple of stints in Congress, back in 1988, you know, he's a libertarian thought leader for a long time, in and out of Congress. Back in 1988, sat down for an interview talking about law enforcement and intel agencies in America. And he had this to say about the FBI 35 years ago.
You know, most of our history, we didn't have those institutions. The FBI came in during the First World War. And interestingly enough, the one thing that Woodrow Wilson did, he used the FBI to spy on American citizens and actually arrest them if they disagreed with his foreign policy about going to war in Europe. And isn't it interesting how recent they used it in the Vietnam era? Democrats used it there. Republicans used the FBI to spy on 100 different groups in this country, including the churches, who disagree with the policy in Central America. It almost looks like the FBI was designed to spy on Americans who might be disagreeing with policy, especially the foreign policy. So the FBI, although I don't think I could condemn everything they've ever done, because I'm sure some of the investigations and investigation of crime has been beneficial, but that could be accomplished through Justice Department within our states. We wouldn't reject that portion of it. But I think the FBI has kept and continues to keep a lot of records on a lot of individuals.
Mm-hmm. Looky there. Ron Paul years ago.
FBI mainly, mainly focused on spying on Americans. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Apparently, we have another such case.
We have a mole inside Mar-a-Lago, an FBI spy.
The report of that. That seems, I'd like to ultimately find out exactly how that went down, if that report from two senior unnamed officials to Newsweek, to reporters at Newsweek, is accurate. Because, Mar-a-Lago is a big place, and I know they got a staff, but you think after, I don't know, a few years of being and knowing that your campaign was under surveillance from the FBI, you'd
run a tighter ship?
Well, you just think, like, how does somebody get introduced into that environment that is unknown?
That's a good question. I mean, there was an FBI mole, yeah, inside the Trump campaign, inside the Trump administration, and then post-presidency. And apparently this mole, FBI mole, told the bosses about the documents and where to find them, but yet they were still with guns drawn, 30 agents. They were there for 12 hours. They even went through Melania's closet looking for what?
Yeah, I guess keep up appearances, I guess, if the mole had identified some cache of documents and directed them where to go.
And what's the chain of custody, too, of those boxes? You know, that's why.
I don't know. I mean, where to go to get the documents? I mean, that required a inside man? You had the FBI negotiating, collaborating, talking to FBI for months. They had been on the premises twice, pick up boxes. So
it's a witch hunt. But
I don't know.
I love what Alan Dershowitz said about it, because he obviously is not a Trump fan.
Look, I'm a liberal Democrat. I voted for Biden. I'm not going to vote for Trump if he runs for re-election. I want to have the right to vote against him. I don't want to see bureaucrats deny me that right to vote against him. That's what democracy is. And this is part of what I think, an attempt to try to get him disqualified from running. I don't think it's going to work. I think it actually probably has strengthened his base of support. Look, there are three kinds of people out there. There are the anti-Trump haters, for whom anything that happens to Trump, Professor Lawrence Tribe, doesn't matter. He'll trash the Constitution to get Trump. Then there are the Trump lovers. It doesn't matter how much evidence they might have. It's not possible that Trump did anything wrong. And then there's the vast majority of neutral Americans who want to see justice done, who want to see fair justice. They don't want a different rule for Hillary Clinton and Sandy Berger on the one hand and President Trump on the other hand. They want to see equal justice under the law.
And there is no equal justice, because there's a double standard. When President Obama left the White House, he took 30 million documents with him from D.C. to Chicago, and he said he's going to digitize them and, you know, put it out for the public to see. And to date, there's been nothing. And so where are those boxes?
Yeah.
And this librarian from the National Archives, according to Fox News, it's David Fierro. He's the person who labeled the Constitution, put a warning message on it, because it might be a trigger for people.
So what's your point?
Well, he wants, this is clearly a hit job on Trump. He's the one who wanted certain things back. And what they found so far, according to NBC News, a letter from Kim Jong-un, a cocktail napkin, and a birthday party dinner menu.
You have some other issues. The judge that signed the warrant to authorize the raid had said pejorative things about Trump vis-a-vis John Lewis. Probably should have recused himself on that. Not that another judge wouldn't have signed the same warrant. We don't know. You have an effort by Judicial Watch to actually get a copy of the warrant and the supporting documentation outlining the argument they made for probable cause. But also, too, you have reporting on the one hand that this is just about documents in possession. You have a suggestion on the other hand that this is really about January 6th. Then it would be hard to believe that all of this would be done if it wasn't about January 6th. Former Trump attorney for a time during the Russian collusion investigation, Ty Cobb, who used to be the leading hit getter of all time in baseball.
Well, exactly.
Before Pete Rose. Mm-hmm. Different Ty Cobb.
Different.
Ty Cobb was on with Aaron Burnett on CNN, said this.
Truly bizarre to bring a Public Records Act charge against a former president as the first time in history of indicting a former president, because that is just, know, that's the type of thing that just doesn't rise to the level of stress for the Constitution and the democracy. But, you know, the January 6th investigation and the big lie and its perpetuation, there's clearly evidence, consequential evidence of criminal activity. And yesterday, I believe Judge Reinhardt put his hand to that and agreed.
Well, that's an interesting theory that Ty Cobb has, but he doesn't know anything of the latter part of what he said. He's giving a position on whether or not this was just about classified documents for the National Archives or whether it was about Trump's conduct related to 1-6. He, of course, thinks it's the latter. Other people do, too, in terms of, you know, obvious evidence of criminal activity. And that's what the judge was putting his signature to. Well, that's not what's being reported in part in some outlets, number one. And number two, we have no evidence to support that regardless of the reporting. Ty Cobb was part of the legal team, not a Trump defender. He didn't believe that the Russian collusion investigation was a witch hunt, and it turned out to be precisely that, which is why he's on CNN. So it's just interesting. But as sort of a Trump critic, if you will, despite having represented him for a time in part, it's interesting that he thinks it's about 1-6. Dershowitz is also only partially right, I think. Right. In terms of the motivation, they want to disqualify him from running for office in 2024, running for president again. Well, number one, I think some on the left do and some on the left don't. I think many on the left want him to be the nominee in 2024. And that's part of this if you're looking at it through a political prism. Also, there is a very slim chance that if all this is what it's been reported to be. And by the way, those confidential sources that provided the mole information to Newsweek, that's being celebrated and people are having fun trying to guess who the deep throat was. They suggest to Newsweek that it is what it appears to be, that they wanted this to be a routine law enforcement action. And it's about the classified documents relating to the Presidential Records Act and nothing more. So, you know, you've got a lot of theories and claims going in a lot of different directions about this. And that's unsurprising when you don't have federal law enforcement, starting with Merrick Garland, that's willing to provide the public any guidance on the basis for the action, the unprecedented action that took place, and sort of the broad picture of what what exactly they're looking for, or in what way Trump has been noncompliant, given the months-long interaction between his legal representation and the government's. Yeah. Grant in Rockford, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, you two. Great show. The mole theory is interesting. I mean, it could be anybody to a Secret Service agent. I mean, these government officials have proven that there is no low they will not stoop to get Trump. Mm-hmm. And another quick point and a joke, if I may, but, the great Maharishi always said, never underestimate the ability of the left to overplay their hand. They may have really shot themselves in the foot with this one.
Possible.
A quick joke.
Yeah, it's possible.
You know, and a quick joke here. I saw something funny on the internet the other day. It said, they opened up Trump's safe, and all that was in there was pictures of Hunter Biden smoking crack. Have a good one, guys. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Biden, and now he's off. I don't know if you saw it. It was just so disgusting, the arrogance. Hunter Biden was getting on Air Force One with Jill and his dad, Joe, yesterday, and they just looked so snotty. Like, they're leaving. They're not going to talk about anything. You know, we're going on a vacation. No one can find Merrick Garland. He's not saying anything either.
The other story related to Trump, I mean, he's got all sorts of legal wranglings. Was Trump going to New York to be deposed in the civil investigation being brought by the state attorney general, Letitia James, about the valuation of Trump Organization assets? And he took the fifth. And so this was, of course, just Trump took the fifth.
He's guilty.
And he said, in response to taking the Fifth and the furor surrounding it. I once asked, if you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment? Now I know the answer to that question. When your family, your company, and all the people in your orbit have become the targets of an unfounded, politically motivated witch hunt supported by lawyers, prosecutors, and the fake news media, you have no choice. Attorney General Letitia James openly campaigned on the policy of get and destroy Trump. She developed a political platform and made a career out of maliciously attacking me and my business before she was even elected. And he's not wrong. Here are some Letitia James. She's the Attorney General of New York, conducting this impartial, objective investigation based on where the evidence leads. Right. This is some of the statements she made on the campaign trail per what Trump was referencing.
Bring him down! His days are numbered!
Beating Donald Trump! Nothing else matters!
What is fueling my soul right now is Trump.
He's up to Zoom. We're going to be a real pain in the ass.
We're going to be a real pain in the ass. Going to get him. What's fueling my soul? Oh, no, it's a dispassionate prosecutor.
She's not political at all.
No.
How
dare you?
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 646-36. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
And here's who she's speaking to and who the Democrats are counting on. I'll give you sort of a prototype. This is one of the protesters against Trump standing outside of Trump Tower in New York City.
Is this unprecedented to arrest a former president for not turning in documents?
A former president that had committed this many provable criminal acts.
But what are the provable criminal acts, I guess?
Provable criminal acts. Well, I'm done talking.
Oh, because he doesn't have an answer.
It's just one of those statements you can generally get away with. Certainly you see this with the talking heads on the cable news channels. Provable criminal acts. You just heard Ty Cobb essentially say something like that, too. Really? Well, what are they? And what's the proof? Wrap it up. I mean, Adam Schiff spent 3 years saying this about a Russian collusion. Never challenged and then not held to account when there was nothing there. Uh-huh. Jim in Elgin.
Hello?
Yeah, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Well, good morning. Let's not forget that Lois Lerner took the Fifth when she was asked about her dealings with the IRS, you know, so it kind of goes both ways.
Yeah.
Yep, so okay. This whole thing against Trump is really awful.
Yeah, that's why we have a Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. Yeah, I get it. It goes both ways. Absolutely. It goes every way, yes.
Well, these people that want to sit there and get all exercised over Trump saying this, well, let's say what happened to Lois Lerner. Just put it back on him.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Okay. Mike in Geneva.
Hey guys, this just all reminds me of the 1983 movie Trading Places, Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, where the Dukes just decide, because Lewis Winthorpe is so good at his job, let's do an experiment. Let's just set him up and bring him down and watch what happens. Plant drugs on him, you know, kind of humiliate him. But at the end of the day, Lewis Winthorpe and Eddie Murphy, they turn the tables on the Dukes. So maybe, you know, this whole Trump thing will kind of turn our way inadvertently for the Dukes.
And he'll wind up with Jamie Lee Curtis. Yeah. Right.
Well, you could do worse.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. Kevin in Austin, Texas.
Well, I want to thank the Biden administration for the left and whoever's involved in doing this, because I think it's fired up Republicans a little bit earlier than Labor Day to get involved. I hope that people that listen to this realize that this is something that the left wants as far as control, and it's about just keeping in power. And I hope you refer to the so-called inflation bill. It's more like the IRS expansion bill.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. But let's get, you know, let's use this anger and tax, you know, try to get involved in the local Republican Party and let's move Illinois more to the right as far as policies.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Elliot and Wilmette.
Hello. People are saying this is a giant mistake for the Democrats to do this so close to November. I don't think this means they're not actually worried about November. I think they've got it sewed up the same way they did the last election.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. No. And don't be fatalistic about the thing is rigged, and so all these races are unwinnable and so on and so forth. Don't do that. It's not true. There have been any number of reforms to how elections are administered in any number of states, more than two dozen between 2020 and in advance of, well, between 2020 and now in advance of the midterms. So, no, they don't think they have it sewn up. They don't have it sewn up. It is not a fait accompli. Jordan in Antioch.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Thanks for taking my call. What if it's just as simple as these people are morons? And these are also the same people that were in a fever pitch over the naked Trump. What if somebody that they had in there called and said, they're destroying documents, and they said, we got to send them in, and then they went in, and they went, oh, crap. Well, now what do we do? And that's why we haven't heard anything from them, because they're knee-deep.
It could be, Occam's razor, I hear you. Yeah,
and they're all sitting in a room looking at it going, you know, you did this the last time, I'm not going out in front of these people
right.
anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
What if it's that simple?
What if it was put? What if this was put? What if this was put on by the same people who put on Jerry Rivers in Al Capone's vault? Yeah,
this is not beyond the pale, because these people are that dumb. They're I mean, really, it could be that simple because they are that simple.
Thanks for the call, Jordan. Chris in Evanston.
Guys, thank you for everything that you do. Number one, and number two. I think relying on what Dan just said about the changes in election administration and the fact that elections really do count, this whole episode has got to say there's nothing they will not do to hold on to power. And if our folks, whoever is out there, even if you're a Democrat and you're shocked at how bad these guys are, you've got to get out in November, because as bad as this is, and it's horrid, it can get worse, and they want it worse. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Yeah, I mean, we played a little bit of VDH from early in the week, Victor Davis Hanson on Fox talking about this, and I think his concluding statement in the interview that he did is a good one. He's suggesting what kind of country he wants to live in. And he's sort of, he's putting Kevin McCarthy in the speaker's chair and comparing his reaction, what his reaction would be if Kevin McCarthy had done and was doing the things that Nancy Pelosi and Democrats had done, for example.
I don't want to live in a country where Kevin McCarthy tears up the State of the Union address as soon as Joe Biden gives it. I don't want to live necessarily in a country when Kevin McCarthy says no squad member is going to be on any House committee, or Mitch right. McConnell is going to go to the Supreme Court and yell about Supreme Court justices. But that's what we're
Victor.
At. And let's pray to God the Republicans can save us.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It was revisited in part in this video that President Trump posted after the raid on Mar-a-Lago the other night. What was revisited? Our abdication from Afghanistan. And if it's not part of the discussion so much in advance of the midterms, it certainly will be revisited in advance of the next presidential election in 2024. Elliot Ackerman, who is a former White House fellow and Marine, served five tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, where he received the Silver Star, the Bronze Star for valor, and the Purple Heart. He has a new book on his time serving our country over there. Called The Fifth Act, America's End in Afghanistan. He joins us now. Elliot Ackerman, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So the motif, one of the motifs throughout the book is this idea of leaving no man behind. And of course, this was central to the discussion of the chaotic, to be generous, departure of U.S. forces from Afghanistan. And I know you, from the book, you were involved in trying to get allies, Afghan nationals who were helpful to U.S. troops out as well during that tumultuous period. Can you describe what you did, experienced, and thought about our withdrawal?
Well, I think what I think about it, it kind of goes to the title of the book, you know, the Fifth Act, and so much as it's called the Fifth Act, because if you look from, you know, Shakespeare back, tragedies are told in five acts. Uh-huh. I think our withdrawal from Afghanistan, as you put it, the chaotic withdrawal, you know, it was tragic. So it was like watching a tragedy. So, you know, the book talks about some of the history in Afghanistan, and the five acts are the presidents, Bush, Obama, Trump, Biden, the fifth act being the Taliban, but it also goes through five cases that I was involved in this summer of evacuating what wound up being more than 200 Afghans. And those cases had a mixed outcome. Some were successful and some were not. But it was part of a really this broader effort that someone called kind of a digital Dunkirk, which is this massive crowdsourced evacuation. And it needed to be crowdsourced because when Kabul fell swiftly, what became obvious was that the administration, that there was no real contingency plan for what to do to get all these people out, and sort of bedlam ensued.
Think about it. It was a year ago. The anniversary of that was 1 year yesterday, and that felt like 10 years ago, doesn't it?
It certainly does. So I think, you know, in America today, we seem to live in dog years as we kind of go from one crisis to the next. But yes, I agree with you.
And part of that withdrawal, I mean, the indelible moments of the people chasing the transport plane down the runway trying to get out. But of course, the 13 service members who lost their lives in the attack at the airport, 11 Marines, one Navy corpsman, and one soldier. And how you reconcile what happened during the withdrawal after the number of tours of duty you did, and I'm sure your fellow soldiers did that time, and then to see that attack and the lives lost on that day, what did that do to you?
Well, I was very much involved in it. I actually that day had just managed to evacuate a group of about 30 Afghans through the Abbey Gate. And so we were actually very pleased because this had, we'd gotten them out. It had been successful. And then about 45 minutes later, the bomb went off at the Abbey Gate. But, you know, when we look at the war, I think one of the things that was very difficult to see how Afghanistan ended, which was, you know, uncategorically an American defeat, is, you know, Afghanistan, along with one other war, is sort of unique in American history. And another war is the Second World War. You know, the Second World War is a war that was predicated based on an attack on our homeland, which was the Pearl Harbor attacks. And that was an uncategorical American victory. And Afghanistan, which is the only other war predicated based on an attack on our homeland, the September 11th attacks, was a uncategorical American defeat. And so how do we reconcile ourselves to that? And that is also one of the themes that I try to wrestle with in the book.
How many did we leave any Americans behind?
We did. There were many Americans who could not get out of Afghanistan. Now the administration said at many points, well, these are people who decided to stay behind. You know, they were given the opportunity to leave and they chose not to. But I think that is a little bit disingenuous. I mean, these are people who decided to stay with their families. So they themselves were Americans and had blue passports, but they had family members who did not, loved ones who couldn't leave. And so they made and we were not allowing their loved ones to come to America. So they made the decision to stay with their loved ones aside from returning to America themselves, you know. And you know, I try to tell the story. I tell the story in the book, but this entire episode is just riddled with horrible decisions like that. You know, I was involved in one evacuation where a family had been cleared to leave the country. They were under threat for the Taliban. The Taliban had already searched their house. They're on the tarmac getting ready to go. And our own State Department tells them that they cannot leave because the two-year-old on the flight doesn't have a passport.
Right.
So they can either leave the two-year-old behind
or
stay in Afghanistan. And they stayed in Afghanistan.
Right. That's certainly consistent with our policy at our southern border, isn't it? I mean, it's just, that's the thing about this, too. I mean, I guess as you've done the work to put this book together and thought about your time in the service, what do you think about sort of the modern incarnation of our senior military leadership across the last several administrations?
Well, I think there has been a dabbling in politics amongst senior military leaders, as well as retired very senior military that is concerning to me. It is not healthy for our republic to have senior military leaders weighing in on these issues publicly, showing their political biases. The founding fathers knew that a strong standing military was always a threat to a democracy. We have a strong standing military and a very large standing military in the United States today. And we also have a very dysfunctional politics. And when you couple a large standing military with dysfunctional politics, it is not healthy for a republic.
The news last week of the killing of al-Zawahiri, who had been in Kabul when he was struck by that that drone. After putting your life on the line so many times in that part of the world, and then you have one of the 9/11 architects, even though maybe he had become less relevant, but essentially being protected in Afghanistan the way that bin Laden was in Pakistan, that's got to be incredibly frustrating.
It is incredibly frustrating, and it's incredibly frustrating as well to see his death trotted out as though it proves the case and proves the effectiveness of the American policy in Afghanistan. Obviously, is it a good thing that our intelligence agencies and military were able to kill Zawahiri? Of course, that's a good thing, and I applaud that effort. But that's a tactical victory. The problem the United States has had has never been that we're not good at killing terrorists. We're very good at killing terrorists.
Yeah.
But killing terrorists is a tactic. It's not a strategy. We've never had the right strategy with regards to dealing with al-Qaeda. And I think the fact that we're sitting here now after 20 years of war and the Taliban are still providing safe haven for al-Qaeda terrorists just proves the fact that we have been bested strategically, even if we are able to claim some of these tactical victories along the way.
What do you think is where the rethinking on strategy needs to happen?
Well, I think I was always of the belief that it was important for the U.S. to have an enduring presence in Afghanistan. And I think it was strategically short-sighted for us to pull out Afghanistan, which, in 2018 and 2019, we were taking virtually no casualties in Afghanistan. We had less than 10,000 troops there. And that is a pretty de minimis cost for having a good U.S. presence in that part of the world. A nation like Afghanistan that shares a land border with both China and with Iran. And that's not making some argument that, we should just keep fighting forever wars. But we had actually finally arrived at the point, even though it came too late, where the Afghans were fighting that war. It wasn't Americans who were fighting at that point. It was Afghans fighting and dying in Afghanistan. And to just sort of pull the plug on that, to me, is very strategically short-sighted to, quote-unquote, end the war. We still have American troops in places like Iraq and Syria and Somalia and Nigeria. Are we fighting wars in those places? Did the wars not end in those places? So we seem to conflate ending a war with every single American having to come back from the country where the war was fought. And that's never been the case. In the Second World War, all the troops didn't come home. They stayed in Europe. The Korean War, they stayed on the Korean Peninsula. In fact, if you look, the only time all of the troops come home at the end of the war is when we lose the war, like in Vietnam and now like in Afghanistan. And I think that is strategically short-sighted and not in the best interest of the United States.
Do you think we've developed this unhealthy tendency of overreaching and as well as underreaching, overreaching with things like statecraft and exporting democracy, if you will, or attempting to, and underreaching when it comes to something like you were talking about, where you're making progress, you're turning over the fighting to the locals and providing that sort of expertise, training, support, and then you're pulled, leaving the locals incapable of keeping up the fight against an oppressive regime.
Well, I think that's an interesting and apt way to put it. The problem between overreaching and underreaching in certain areas, and I think we oftentimes sort of tend to shy away from the kind of real politique, which is often the coin of the realm in international affairs. And by sort of real politique, I just mean the ideas like very simple ideas, like peace through strength. Like, for instance, we're sitting here right now and, you know, we're talking about issues like the Afghan Adjustment Act, because we do have, you know, tens of thousands of Afghans who have now come to the United States and are making their lives here. And I believe will be fantastic citizens, but they need to get on path to be able to work in the U.S. and become citizens. And we also have a Ukrainian refugee crisis as well. So when we talk about kind of real politique, wouldn't it be nice if we could have avoided the Ukrainian refugee crisis? And you better believe that Vladimir Putin was watching, you know, NATO and its ability to perform as an alliance last summer as Kabul fell. And he was probably watching that thinking, you know, this probably seems like a good time to go into Ukraine, because it does not seem as though the alliance has any type of stomach for a fight. Now, the alliance, I think, overperformed in Ukraine, but, you know, perhaps if we had behaved more strongly in Afghanistan, we wouldn't even be in a position to be dealing with Ukraine in the first place.
He is Elliot Ackerman, former White House fellow and Marine. He served five tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, where he received the Silver Star, the Bronze Star for Valor, and the Purple Heart. His new book, pick it up, The Fifth Act, America's End in Afghanistan. Elliot Ackerman, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the book.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, and thanks for your service. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.